ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the most famous words in motorsports with your host, Lugs and the Gas Man. Ladies and gentlemen, start your podcast.
Hey fans, welcome back to another week of Wrecking and Racing. I am your host, the Gas Man. And my host, I was waiting for you to cut me off this week, jackass.
No, that's all right. I'm not excited about as Richmond as I was Bristol, so I'm still excited, just not Bristol excited.
Okay, well, this week we went to Richmond, and I just want you guys to know we have a really good episode planned for you. We actually have a guest on our show.
Hey!
Yeah, we actually have a fan, believe it or not. And not only a fan, he's also a counterpart of Lugs. I'm not going to divulge too much. I'll let him do it. But anyway, our Wizard of Wheels, his name is Sokka. Sokka, tell us about yourself.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Sokka here. At least that's what I say in all of my YouTube videos. I've known these guys a really long time. We go back to junior high when they were talking about their favorite drivers. I was right there in that mix. They were kind enough to welcome me to the podcast. So thanks you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely nice seeing you. I would say you're a big fan, but you're kind of a tiny guy, so you're a tiny fan. How about that?
A very tiny fan.
Tiny fan in a big way.
Be small by most NASCAR fans' proportions, but you know.
What was it? Did you just make a fat joke about our fans?
Oh, no, I wouldn't.
Guys, I want you to know that we love fat people because the Gas Man is as plump as they come.
hence the name. Nah. But on a serious note, yeah, big fan. I started watching racing in the early 90s. My grandfather was a big Richard Petty fan. That goes how back he goes. And he migrated to Dale Earnhardt in the early 90s. And I remember my very first race. And Gas Man, you may remember this quote, but we were a quarter lap away from victory and we cut a tire down. Nothing really you can do about it. And that moment stuck with me for a while. So I was a fellow Earnhardt fan with the Gas Man here.
Yes. Yeah. So tell us, you have a racing series, right?
Indeed. So every Thursday, Lugs and myself run a NASCAR Racing 2003 season championship. We go to the tracks that they actually go to in real life. We duplicate the season. And, it's a really fun series. You can learn a lot from the driver's perspective, watching my videos from the cockpit and my commentary on how to actually drive the racetrack. So if you're a fan that wonders what are the drivers seeing when they come down pit road or what are they seeing when they're in the middle of three wide at Talladega, it's a good watch, and I recommend all NASCAR fans tune in.
Yeah, the rumor is that Lugs kicks your butt.
He does. He is actually in front. He is leading the championship standings, but I'm in second. Our season is very replicative of the actual season,
yeah,
with two very dominating drivers.
Yeah. So, question, if it's replicating the season, what cars are you guys driving?
We're actually doing our own paint schemes. I promote video games that I play on my channel. Right now I'm racing the Crusader Kings Camaro, and Lugs is going to debut the WreckingAndRacing.com Camaro here in a few weeks at the All-Star Race. So,
yes, really, fans, you heard that correctly. We are sponsoring a computer car. Yes.
Well, low cost.
Yeah, we are moving up in life.
But if you've heard of iRacing and Jeff Gluck, the columnist with JeffGluck.com, obviously didn't know the power iRacing has. Digital sponsorship takes off, and it's something that can really touch and reach fans.
And I think it's important to preface what NASCAR Racing 2003 is, because some of our fans may only know iRacing, but NASCAR Racing 2003 is a game that basically laid the foundation for iRacing.
Right.
It came out in 2003. It's been heavily modded, come out with track updates, car updates. You know, you can virtually do anything in the game to bring it up to, you know, the current 2018 season. So
yeah, so Brent Lugs and myself actually run the 2018 car set, and you know, the drivers you see on Sunday are the drivers you see in our series on Thursday.
Right.
So now, since we bring that up, actually I remember something I read last week. I think it was NASCAR and NBC made a Twitter comment about what racing series do you still race today.
Yeah, and I saw that.
The NASCAR 2003 season is by far the premium one that people still utilize.
Yeah, and I like iRacing. I've done it a few times, but I don't want to pay the monthly subscription for racing online. I'd rather race a little bit of AI, and I like racing Sokka and having our own kind of series going on. The few times I've done iRacing is, you know, I've enjoyed it, but it's almost too tense for me.
You know, too
nerve-wracking because, gotcha. You know, you get into somebody and you get docked points, or, you know, you spin Scott out speed. Or hit the wall, you get docked
Scott
points.
Speed. Scott speed.
And Scott it's speed. A really steep learning curve as far as, like, I could make the lap times and keep up with the AI, but it's like if you make one accident or one, you know, miss move, you know, then you paid the price dearly.
It truly is the easiest way to get into motorsports. If you are a fan that wants to race, but you don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to go and get your own car, mm-hmm. you can spend $1,000 on a good gaming rig, $200 on a steering wheel, $20 a month, and you are racing competitively by a actual sanctioned series that NASCAR watches very closely.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, kids. Get your driver's license early. So let's go. Let's move on. All of our fans, thank you for listening this week. Our Aussie friends, cheers, mates. We love you guys. WreckingRacing.com. Email us. You know, talk to us. WreckingRacing.
What video games do you play?
Yeah, tell us what video games you play. Or just call us nerds. You know, whatever you want to do, that's fine. We appreciate it all.
Gasman's used to that, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So as always, we're gonna start off with our beer. Busch.
The official beer of NASCAR.
That's right. And I do want to announce that Sokka will not be partaking in our tradition.
But of Hendrick Faithful, I am drinking the Mountain Dew.
We don't have Faithfuls on this show, Sokka.
Well,
he's
that's
a
why.
Fan. He, you know,
he's a fan. Yeah, that's true. So we do have fan.
Sokka, tell us who is your driver for the 2018 season.
And I'm in your guys' boat. I have no dog in the fight when it comes to 2018. Dale Jr. was my to-go driver, and I just want to see a good race. I want to see them put on a show.
Fan of the sport.
Right. I love motorsports, including the open wheels that Gasman may not be a too big a fan of, but
I think we established that on one of the previous shows.
Yeah, he went on a rant.
Yeah, so WreckingRacing.com, WreckingRacing@gmail.com. Sokka, what's your website?
YouTube.com/SokkaKinoResaGames. It's a mouthful. I don't expect anyone to know, but if you just YouTube Sokka, you'll find me.
Sakka. All right, let's get into Richmond. So we'll just start off with this. Kyle Busch won three in a row.
Another three in a row.
Yeah.
Matched Kevin Harvick.
Second one this season. So my thoughts on Richmond, and we'll go have a round table here in a second. My thoughts were, you got Richmond the last 50 laps. Other than that, you just got a boring-ass race that we all were kind of snoozing through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Your guys' thoughts?
I agree. You know, whatever it was, last 50, 75 laps once. You know, and there was some interesting strategy going on there a little bit, short pitting and whatnot. But, you know, for the most part, the last 75 laps were, you know, the only thing worth really tuning into in hindsight.
Now, yeah.
One of the things that I noticed about this week's Richmond is it was rated at 74% as a good race from Jeff Gluck's random Twitter poll he does each week. He says, was it a good race?
Don't want to interrupt you, but is Jeff Gluck paying you, by the way?
No, it's just...
You sure are saying his name a lot on our show.
The dude has, the dude has, you know, insider information. He asks good questions like, was it a good race?
Yeah, we are fans of Jeff Gluck. We, you know, follow him on Twitter and all that stuff. So.
And if
went to the tweet-ups a few times at the racetrack.
Yeah, if 75% of the people said it was a good race, my question is, you know, why? Like, what was memorable about it? Because I was in the camp that, yeah, there were some lead changes, but it, like, if you just say Richmond, what happened? Kyle Busch won and, you know, Ricky Stenhouse blew pit road. Like, that's what comes to my mind, not the lead changes or the stage wins for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, talking about Jeff Cluck's poll he took, I actually answered that poll and I said no. So, yeah. I was one of those 23%, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the race, a couple of things that we ran into, Logano kind of took stages one, stages two, kind of took it from Clint Bowyer in stage two. I'm going to kind of dive back a little bit to last week. Last week, I did say that I thought Clint Bowyer was going to win the race.
You did.
And for a short time there, I actually looked like a genius because Clint Bowyer was leading and Byron was fifth, and Byron was my dark horse to do good. So
yeah, Byron, you know, until he got busted for speeding.
Exactly.
He was being really competitive. Top five, top six, and then, you know, got popped and he still came home 12th. Yeah. But respectable.
But since you bring that up, let's talk about the pit road issues we had throughout the race. So Byron, since we were already discussing that, Byron running really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Had that speeding penalty and did come back and finish 12th, but still, I think he had a lot better car than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It goes back to that short track experience. You get an Xfinity driver coming up to the Cup Series. You don't expect them to run the long 600-mile races, but you do expect them to go to a short track and do really well.
Yeah. So, Sokka, since we're talking to you at the moment, Kevin Harvick's crew member throwing the wrench over the wall. What's your thoughts on that?
Sheer adrenaline and being caught up in the moment, knowing this is a big stop. This is the stop of the race. We need to get it done. And, you know, when you're at 100%, you just throw. You just go. He was trying to get it short because the rules say that equipment can't pass over the wall.
Get to the wall.
It can get it to the wall. It can hit the wall and bounce down, but it went over the wall, and obviously the crew member on the other side of the wall wasn't expecting it.
No,
so that wasn't,
it hit him in the nads.
That wasn't a planned move whatsoever. It was just being caught up in the moment. And we've seen that throughout Kevin Harvick's pit stops this year, is just simple, simple mistakes. A lug nut bouncing in the jack, you can't predict.
Yeah.
But everything else just errors on behalf of the pit crew.
You know, as being a Dela Jr. fan that I was and that you were as well, pit road was always a frustration for us. How many times did we see a chance for a potential victory or even a good finish?
And Jr. would get busted for
speeding. Yeah, exactly. Or some kind of, he misses pit box, whatever it was, just stupid stuff.
One of my favorite Dale Jr. quotes about pit road, I remember he was at Daytona and he ran into a tire and they taped up his nose. It looked really solid, but it was just like a big black piece of bare bone. And he got on the radio and said, "I am so glad we do not have to come down pit road anymore."
Right. So, Lugs, what kind of stuff did you see on pit road or anything else you want to throw in on that?
Not really, but when you guys just brought that up, it reminds me, Denny Hamlin fans out there, they feel your pain. He's constantly getting busted for speeding, constantly. So that just made me think of that. But
I think it was Darlington, he got busted twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there was one race he got popped two or three times. Yeah, absolutely. So pit road-wise, no, there's not anything else I want to add to that. The only one thing I do want to bring up is what was going on between Larson and McMurray there.
Do we really know?
Yeah,
it was interesting. I think everybody was kind of gasping on that. Like, why would McMurray do that? Because obviously Larson is not the one that caused the wreck.
Yeah. So for those of you that didn't see the race or maybe don't know what we're referring to, Larson and McMurray, their teammates, after a caution came out, which basically was the result of Newman and McMurray getting together, I believe. The caution came out, and Larson and McMurray had a scuffle. They were basically banging into the corner, sent Larson up the track and, you know, rubbed the Goodyear off the tires and, you know, crinkled up the fenders and everything. It wasn't anything that I don't think could not come back from, but it was obvious that there was some displeasure going on there. And, you know, it was cool to see, I guess, that between teammates. Unless you're Chip Ganassi, then
Yeah, you're like, damn, both my cars were screwed up.
And they never showed Chip. I don't know if he was at Richmond or not. But
The IndyCar race was running that weekend as well. So I think
was
him saying.
Was it Long Beach?
Long Beach. Yeah. I think he was in Long Beach.
Very well could have been. But yeah, you're right.
No, I think it was Alabama.
They were at Barber.
Oh, Long Beach the week before.
Right, indeed.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
And that's one owner that you don't want to crash a car. Chip Ganassi. The guy punches the winning crew chief for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So you know, and Felix Sabatis.
Excitedly, not upsetly. Excitedly.
But they never really said what it was. And they said, well, maybe it's because they were both going for the lucky dog to get their laps back. And, you know, Larson was trying to get ahead. They were kind of racing back to the caution caution loop or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I watched Radioactive yesterday on Race Hub, and it still didn't really divulge a lot of information from it. You could hear the scanner back and forth on both teams. And I really think that maybe McMurray, I don't know if he wasn't sure who got into him, who was the culprit. Like, he didn't know it was Newman.
But
what,
you think
Larson.
His spotter would step up
and
say something?
But in the scanner, that was never brought up. So I think if I was spotting, if I was crew chiefing, I would be like, hey, it wasn't Larson that did that, you know? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
crazy situation, though.
Yeah, it definitely was. That was some of the little excitement that happened during the race. Good. One thing I want to throw out there, kind of backtrack just a touch about pit road issues. What about the night Truex had? He looked like a stud. And then that last pit stop, or second to last pit stop, he looked like a dud.
Yeah, they didn't get the jack all the way up. Didn't get the car all the way up.
It was another one of those freak pit road incidents. We've seen the lug nut going Kevin Harvick's jack. And this one, a tire rolls and turns the handle.
Yeah, crazy.
I mean, how many times does a tire turn a handle on a jack? It makes you wonder, are they going to modify the jacks to where it has to be released with a lever rather than the quick twist of a handle? You know, well, would you give up?
If NASCAR has anything to do with it, we're all going to the exact same jacks at the same pressure to be applied. And yeah, it's a dig at NASCAR about the pit guns. Yeah. But we'll get to that in a second. But so Truex went out. Was he first or second when he came in on that pit stop?
Came in first, I believe.
Yeah, he was leader.
He came out 11th, worked his way up to 8th. That next caution came out, he thought he was going to pull off some cool strategy and get new tires, because obviously tires were the hot ticket, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he made his way back up to 14th and finished 14th.
So let's talk about that. Why didn't anybody gamble on that last pit stop? Why didn't anybody stay out and gamble? Or why didn't anybody just take two tires?
Yeah.
I think it's a product of the long green flags that we had in stage 1 and 2. You've got all those tires.
But what was the last shootout? How many laps was it?
20, maybe? I honestly don't know.
I don't even think it was
It was shorter than that. Yeah. It may have been less than 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That one caution came out with 10 to go.
With 10 to go.
It was like 8 or very many. And granted, Kyle Busch is a hell of a driver, and he was going to be hard to beat with four tires, right? But if enough cars had gambled, I don't get it. Like, for me, if I'm William Byron's crew chief, I would have left him out there.
Yeah, you only needed five cars to stay out there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Create some sort of a buffer, and if you could just build some sort of a gap there, I mean,
you guys remember the old days when the leader was screwed. Whenever the late caution came out, no matter what the leader did, it was wrong. If they stayed out, everyone came and got tired.
Usually always that situation. I mean, even last year.
I was expecting that.
I don't understand why nobody rolled the dice.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up there, Lugs. Why? I mean, we're not making the money that they're making to make that decision, but as a fan looking at it, it's definitely a head-scratcher. I mean, we are used to seeing the lead person with that few laps ago kind of being screwed, left out to dry. This case, it's kind of foreshadowing. You can kind of see what was going to happen.
Exactly. Anybody, you know, at the cusp of the top 10. So Suarez, Kurt Busch, Byron, heck, even Eric Jones, like that was 10th and 13th. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't roll the dice. You got really nothing to lose at that point. I don't think you would have faded much farther than that. So,
and the night Suarez had, he might as well. He did everything else.
Or Almirola. I mean, Almirola, I don't know that he led some laps, but he was up in the top five. He had a strong car.
I was looking at the fastest laps ran. He had like the third fastest lap at the race.
But towards the last 100 laps, he really fell off. He was unhappy with his car. But again, you know, take some gambles, you know?
Grow some nuggets, you know? Yeah, chicken nuggets is what I meant, by the way. talk about Kyle Busch. He kind of, like I said, foreshadowing. We kind of seen that happening. As soon as he took the lead, we all kind of almost felt like the sails have shipped or ships have sailed, whatever.
Sails have shipped.
The sails have shipped.
So we all kind of felt, at least I feel like we all felt, that we all knew how the outcome was going to be. They try to talk fast and excited on the TV, but they all know the same damn thing. We know that Kyle Busch was going to win it.
Yeah.
So,
but let's say this, though. He didn't dominate that race.
No, he did. No, absolutely not. I don't feel like he should have won the race. I don't. I think there was better cars out there.
Absolutely. With Truex's fumble, you know, and let's be honest, although Elliott got second,
he was not a second place car.
He was not a factor.
Fifth place, maybe?
Yeah.
But so, not second, yeah.
Again, and, you know, yeah, he came home with second, but again, why didn't Kenny Francis, not Gustafson, but Kenny Francis could have rolled the dice and said, hey, let's leave him out, you know? I don't know, or do two tires. But again, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah. So Kyle Busch, after the victory, goes into the stands and greets his fans. Now, one surprise, I guess it's not really a surprise looking back at it retrospectively, but there was a lot of Eminem fans. A lot. So he felt that that whole episode with Dale Jr. last week really made a change. What's your guys' feelings on that?
I'm sure it won over some fans.
But I came on here and said I'm not as mad at him, you know?
Because of the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always one to give benefit of the doubt. And even though I was upset at Kyle Busch 10 years ago, rightfully so as a junior fan, in later years, even as recently as a few years ago, I wasn't a Kyle Busch hater. If he won, I mad respected the guy. And I think the Dale Jr. download did a lot for Kyle Busch.
Yeah, absolutely.
When Dale Jr. himself gets on and says, look, fans, I have no hard feelings. Kyle has no hard feelings. It's easier for fans, I think, to bury the hatchet when their spokesman comes out and says, we're cool.
Yeah.
And there's been plenty of time for the wound to heal. I mean, it was 10 years ago. So
yeah. So this time, you know, when Kyle wins, what all do we hear all the time? Booze.
It was booze.
What did we hear this week? We heard some cheers.
Yeah.
I think we heard more cheers than booze this time, honestly.
And you don't know unless you're actually live. When we went to Kentucky and Kyle Busch won that inaugural race, it rained down the booze. And then on TV, you have the announcers and all the post aftermarket effects that go on. We don't really know how many cheers there were except from firsthand on the ground tweets, and they said there were more cheers than booze this time around.
Should we start talking about the inaugural Kentucky race? How about we don't?
No.
Yeah, there's a traffic jam right now about that conversation.
In fact, people are still waiting to get in, so
yes. not to discredit Kyle Busch, because I think he's an amazing driver, and not say that I don't like him or anything, but I kind of know how you guys felt back in 1998 right now. You know, whenever I would trudge in and talk about Gordon's win.
But we did have the race of the century that same year, so you could have your 13 wins. We took the big one, okay?
That's all right. Gordon took it the next year.
So. Indeed.
Okay, so Busch wins. That's his third win in a row. Second time it's happened this season. Harvick the first time. Now it's Busch. I've got some facts for you this week. Can you, either of you two tell me how many times it's happened in the past that two different drivers has won three races in a row? Or in the same season?
In the same season?
Same season.
1982.
Wrong.
Close?
No.
I was shot in the dark.
I would say when, you know, just the law of great numbers, the more races you run, I'd say the 60s, 65, 66.
Wrong as well. But here I'll break down the facts for you, right? In 2015, it actually happened.
Oh, no way.
Kyle Busch won three, Logano won three.
Hmm.
The only other time besides that it happened was 1976 with David Pearson and Kelly Yarborough.
Yeah, that was close.
Now, and this... Logs, I want you to know I'm still pissed at you about you not ranking Earnhardt in the top two at least on your top 10
list.
You
knew it was going to happen, so cry me a river.
Here is another fact of why Earnhardt should be up there.
Oh my God. Okay. Really? We're still on this tangent?
Absolutely. It's all about facts. In 1987, Dale Earnhardt had two streaks himself.
He did.
Of three wins.
What were
One
they?
Was three
Tell
wins.
Tell me, I want to know.
One was three wins. Which was like Martinsville, Bristol, and I don't remember what they were. But
let me help you out. I think Richmond was in there.
Okay, and the second time was Darlington, Martinsville, Richmond, and...
Bristol?
Maybe it's Bristol again. So, what I'm getting to is that Senior won three in a row, and then he won four in a row that season. That's just another thing that added his resume for him being the badass that he
was. Okay, what year was that?
87.
Okay. Gordon had four in a row in 98, so...
Yeah, but he didn't win three in a row in the same season, did he? No, he didn't.
Three in a row races?
Yeah. He won four in a row, but he didn't have another consecutive in the row races wins in that season.
Oh, I'd have to look that up. I don't.
He did because I looked it up. So Earnhardt's the only one to have two streaks in the same season of three or more wins.
Hey, gas man is Bill Weber. You don't have to look it up because he already did.
That's right. That's right. And dang it, you make me upset when you discredited Senior the way you did.
Oh,
it's blasphemy. It's blasphemy from the racing gods. It's blasphemy.
Well, be mad at Race Hub because they back me. So.
Race Hub's a bunch of trash. We're such a better podcast.
Hey, whoa. I wouldn't go that far now.
I don't care. They proved themselves to be inefficient in that little top 50 deal that they had.
Somebody's sour.
I don't even want to speak right now.
Good. Well, let me take the next topic then. So, still talking about Richmond, okay? I want to read you guys a couple things here and give me your thoughts on this. So, according to multiple estimates, the crowd for Saturday night's race was around 40,000 people. They said that's up about 10,000 from the previous year on the Sunday afternoon. So that marked the second consecutive scheduled daytime start for Richmond Spring Race. Do you guys think that that's a culprit of just moving it to nights, having the Sunday off? Do you
think it's a resurgence of attendance? I think it just makes it more beneficial for the fan to be able to enjoy their time instead of being rushed back on Monday.
Going to Saturday night races is a completely different animal than Sunday day. It's a feeling of excitement when you go into a Saturday race. Sparks are going to fly. It's under the lights. Mm-hmm. It's cool weather, and so it's comfortable to sit in as a fan.
And ultimately, it did lead to that, although it was very late in the race. But, you know, I believe you got your money's worth. Let me read you another stat here. Let me know what you think about this. That track, Richmond, also once had 112,000 seat capacity and sold out 33 consecutive races from 1992 to 2008. Just to put that in perspective.
So we kind of talked about this earlier in the season. Daytona was sold out, right?
Yes.
But they had half the capacity they did just a few years prior. Right. So I hate hearing these numbers about races being sold out because it's not true or indicative of how the actual environment is.
It's true. Let's see here. Another stat. This is for the overall season up to this far. This is the lowest total debris cautions through nine races since 1990. What's your thoughts on that?
I kind of felt like that because the racing has been...
I feel like so many fans cried sheep about so many debris cautions the last few seasons. I feel like they're getting it right for once.
I don't know about that. I think there's less on-track incident. So what I'm getting to is that overall there's less competitive car, or more non-competitive cars on the track, which means that there's less chance for them to actually be trying to race and push to get that spot, etc., that might cause the beating and banging. That's my feeling on that.
And when you get cars with on a 5-minute clock, you're in a crash, you don't have a bare bonded hood fly up.
That's true. That's true.
In the racing line, or
we can attribute a lot of that to the 5-minute clock rule. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good point. One other piece of trivia for you guys here. So after Truex's, you know, agonizing defeat Saturday night, let me read you this stat. The defending series champion has yet to win a restrictor plate race in 52 starts. That is short of his now 0-75 record on short tracks. So he was that close to getting his first win on a short track. 0-75. And he still has yet to win a restrictor plate race. What's your thoughts on that? Think he can change it at Talladega this weekend?
Of course he can. But so can Trevor Bain. So can David Gilliland.
Talladega. You might not be able to say that for Trevor Bayne much longer.
Stay tuned, fans. But Talladega is one of those unpredictable things. Truex isn't a plate racer. I don't envision Martin Truex Jr. making a pass for the lead at Talladega. It's just not in the cards. And I don't think the Camry as a body style is that conducive to racing at a plate track. It's got those large areas where the brake ducts would be on the production car. I'm seeing a Ford really lead
Fords
Talladega.
Are fast, but don't forget that Hamlin won the 500, what was it, 2 years ago?
He did.
So, and that was in the new Camry, I
Indeed.
Believe. So, so one last bullet point on that stat about Truex. So his 16 victories ranks second behind Greg Biffle, who has 19 for most wins without a short track triumph. Short track triumph. Guess who's number three on the list? That doesn't have a short track win of all the drivers. Not, I'll give you a hint. He's not racing anymore, but he never won on a short track. This kind of surprised me a little bit.
Dale Jarrett.
No, but you're kind of close. Same era.
I didn't.
1990s
driver. I didn't say Dale Jarrett being a. He wasn't Rusty Wallace. Let's put it that way. When it came to short tracks.
Was it like Bobby Labonte?
Close. Sterling Marlin.
Sterling. Yeah.
Tennessee
Sterling,
boy.
Yep. Yeah. Sterling Marlin never had a short track win.
How about that?
How about Michael Waltrip? Did he ever have a short track
win? Well, of course not.
All right, Lugs, what other kind of thoughts you have on Richmond?
I mean, overall, I think it rebounded. You know, it was able to rebound from itself. It, you know, I don't think any fans left angry unless you just absolutely hate Kyle Busch. But there was good racing. I mean, you know, maybe it wasn't the most exciting all the way through the race, but there was, you know, there was some incidents, there was some strategy, you know. So I'm not mad at it. I think it turned out to be a decent race.
It definitely was some strategy. Who was it that was cutting his pits in half? Was it Stenhouse?
Yeah, Stenhouse did it for a while. There's a couple of different drivers that were you know, short pitting.
Yeah, it was interesting to see. Drivers could either go one stop and really stretch their tires out or cut them into thirds and keep fresh tires on. So no one went with the one-stop strategy, cutting it in half, but the option was there, and that's what you want to see on any given weekend is options for the driver and crew chief.
So talking about options, what is your thoughts on, like, what if NASCAR ever came? Remember the All-Star format where there's two selections of the tires?
Yeah.
What if NASCAR offered that every week? As a strategy, to give teams a strategy.
What if they did, or do I think they should?
Well, both.
Neither.
You don't think, okay.
I don't think they should do it. I mean, unless they make a big change to the compound. I mean, they even said themselves they kind of fell on their face a little bit for the All-Star race. There wasn't as big of a difference in the lap times.
Okay.
Between.
I'll step it up one for you, Lugs. This might be pre-Lugs NASCAR days. But what about bringing in another tire manufacturer? And they could choose which tire you go with.
That would go back, harken to the old school. The old school fans would relate. The Hoosier tires. As far as compounds go, they definitely need some work. It's one thing to put option tires on a very lightweight, open-wheeled car. It's quite another to put it on a 3,400-pound beast that just chews through tires like no end. So drivers would really have to manage their wear. Or tire manufacturers would have to accommodate for drivers who drive pretty over their head.
I don't think they need to go down that road, and I think you're going to have too many fans screaming bloody murder if you brought in two compounds, or, you know, some fans might be on the fence about having two different manufacturers, depending on what genre they're from, but I think two different compounds with under one, you know, Goodyear manufacturer, I don't see that happening. I don't think that's a good way to go.
Well, NASCAR's got to shake up the status quo somehow.
They did. The stages.
To an extent, but did it really change racing?
Yeah.
To an extent it did, but I don't think it made the impact they were hoping for. Because one thing, it pissed a lot of fans off.
It did.
And there's a lot of fans that still don't watch it this day because they don't... One is they don't understand the concept. So therefore, they're just avoiding it completely. So I guess I can applaud NASCAR for that. Was that a push by Monster to do something like that?
I think they did want some variance to it, some change. You know,
now, I think it's
a new product they could put their name on.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think that NASCAR has to keep innovation with different strategies, different things to shake it up a little bit, or they're going to lose their fan base.
It's all about playing to your audience, and right now the general person is very quick to look at their phone to do things in quick, short bursts. So the closer they can get the race to resemble a quick, short burst, it's more relatable than, hey, these guys got another 300 miles to go. You've got 2 hours before you might see something.
So you're kind of going in the same direction of what I'm thinking. So from a perspective, I watch NFL. I know you guys are not big football fans, but one thing that makes football great is that the anticipation, what is this play going to be? Is it going to be a run or a pass in this scenario? The whole game is throwing scenarios at you like this. So think as a fan, you're like, man, which tire? I mean, it just brings it a whole different level that keeps the race interesting all the way through. And as a fan, trying to guess what that move is going to be, trying to get in the head of the crew chief. Because right now, the crew chief matters, the team matters, but as a fan, what's our insight to that? We don't have a clue. We don't know how much wedge they've taken in or out. Most fans don't know what the hell that means.
And how many fans can name five crew chiefs on the box right now?
Yeah.
So you could get unsung heroes with different strategy changes, different tires, you know, Kenny Francis looks like a hero, and people are like, oh, Kenny Francis, what has he done? So it's more engagement as well.
Yeah, and people look at Bill Belichick for the Patriots as being this mastermind. What would he do in these different scenarios? Why not find a way to put NASCAR in that same impulse constantly throughout the race of one way or another to keep it interesting? He had those crew chiefs that stand out as being geniuses. That rise coming from on that whole perspective of why I asked that question is, could NASCAR take the similar idea that these other sports have that make them interesting to try to integrate it to keep the excitement going? Because even as the fans that we are, we're dedicated NASCAR fans. We love NASCAR.
But how many fans are as dedicated as we are?
Probably not a lot, but that's the problem. That's the problem I'm getting to, Lugs, is that they are losing fans because 90% of the damn races are snooze fest. So they will turn it on, take their Sunday nap, wake up to watch the last 50 laps.
So why not just have 50 lap races then?
Timing. They have to extend that for marketing reasons. They have to have a time frame.
Yeah, I would say the sponsor commitment. You want to keep people around town for a nice long period of time. You want the tracks to be profitable first and foremost.
And
the
longer a fan is there. And I'm not saying I'm a proponent of that or by any means, but I mean, look at Richmond. If you had a 100 lap race, I mean, you wouldn't have lost anything in the first three quarters of that race.
I agree. What about heat? What about you have three stages, and at the end of each stage, people are getting knocked out?
Yeah, but then you know, again, sponsors are not going to get the limelight and everything like that.
Yeah,
so
it's a
slippery slope.
It is. It's like, what exactly is a race? How do we define a race? Is it a time over distance, or is it spurts? Like, how many different winners can there be a night? Is it racing when, you know, you have different segment winners, like 10 different segment winners each time a car is cut and you get down to a final heat, like...
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of heats, Gasman, I saw on Twitter you extended an invite to Kyle Larson.
Did he ever reply back to you? I did not hear back from Kyle Larson.
Kyle Larson was actually in our neighborhood and didn't even come and say hey to us. Wouldn't even reply to our tweet.
Yeah, I tried to get him here to have him on the show, but I would like to say he gracefully declined our invitation. But no answer. I guess that's as graceful as it gets.
Actually, I don't know that he even came in because it rained. The race, the local outlaw.
But they didn't call it until the last second.
Yeah,
so.
That World Outlaw race.
He was driving Tony Stewart's car in it as well.
Yeah, it was postponed for rain. So I don't know if he... I don't know how that works. I don't know if he made the trek in or said, hey, there's this much percentage chance of rain. I'm not even going to venture out there. I don't know. So
Kyle, if you're listening, call us up now. We'll take you now. It's all right. We'll forget that ever happened.
I don't think he has our number.
I'll give it to you. Wreckingandracing@gmail.com.
Right now.
I'll give you my personal number. You can call me personally on my cell phone.
I was going to say, those are letters, dude. You had too much Bush Light today.
And the fact that this is getting uploaded for 4 hours, he might not be able to call in right now. So.
Yeah, that's very true. tomorrow. Okay, on Thursday. How about that?
Call us up next Wednesday when we record. How about that? So let's talk about one other thing here. Bush got his third win, right?
Yeah.
Is he going to get fourth consecutive at Talladega?
No.
So you don't think that he can win four in a row at Talladega?
I don't. It's four in a row is reserved for
Trevor
great
Bain
drivers.
Could win his first race at Talladega.
Yeah, but not four in a row.
So my point is Kyle could definitely win his fourth.
Anything's possible. Possibilities there. I just don't see it happening. Just the numbers are against him.
Yeah, the odds are stacked against him, let's be honest. But, you know, he almost won. Was it last fall whenever Stenhouse
could
have
happened?
Like two or three
laps? Yes, it could happen. Will it happen? You've heard it from Gasman. Hell
no. I kind of hope it happens just to prove you wrong at this point.
No, not going to happen.
All right, so... Do we want to make picks, or you got anything else you want to talk about first?
Well, let's we'll make picks and finish up Talladega at the end of the podcast. Let's go ahead and start talking about weekly news. Wish we had some kind of news like beat sound or whatever.
Dun dun dun.
So Saka, because we haven't talked to you in a few, I'm gonna throw it your way. What do you have news wise for NASCAR this week?
So first thing, not what you'd expect. The NASCAR has mandated nitrogen for the impact guns. So. mandated use. Is this a product of the gas malfunctioning the guns? Do we think they didn't have enough research and development into the gas that they were using?
Here's what I kind of briefly read on that, is that teams were using different gases to try to speed the guns up for an advantage.
I had not heard that.
So having these engineers within these NASCAR teams, they always try to find that edge, right? So they were trying various different mixes of gases and stuff to try to improve their guns.
Like a good team, they found a hole in the rule book, and they tried to exploit it, and it backfired dramatically.
So a question comes down to, was Harvick or Hamlin's teams possibly the ones doing this? Because they've been the biggest critics.
I would say no, then.
I would say no, but maybe they were having issues, so then they started searching for something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it definitely brings up like an interesting tidbit about the insights of not cheating, because it's within the rules. Mm-hmm. They did not neglect the rules or...
Well, like Sokka said, they found a hole in the rule book and...
They exploited it. Yeah, and that's what good teams do. That's how you always stay on the competitive edge.
Chad Knaus.
Yeah, it was probably Chad that did it. If I had to throw a coin into the hat and said which crew chief didn't use nitrogen, it would be Chad Knaus. He's probably using gasoline.
Yeah, and coming from automotive backgrounds myself, I was actually kind of surprised to hear about... I'm not surprised to hear about nitrogen as being the gas that's supplied these air guns, but you don't usually hear of that. Nitrogen is a more pure form of gas than air, because air is partial oxygen, partial nitrogen. It compresses more, has more moisture in it, etc. So nitrogen is better for the guns. You just don't ever hear about that. You don't hear you taking your car to the shop and them using nitrogen guns.
Right, they're using helium, I believe, which is a very expensive gas and a volatile gas to get in the first place. So you think, it's crazy to think that a gas could do it, but it's great. It's nuts.
What other kind of news we got this week, Lugs? I'll tell you what. Let's just do it this way. What's the big news this week, Lugs?
Big news would be a certain someone coming back into the racing series. Matt Kenseth taking over for the 6 car for Trevor Bayne for a few races.
Matt the Brat.
So, where does this lead? Next season, I mean.
Well, who knows? I mean, I would think that it would lead to good things for Matt Kenseth if he wants it to. But who's to say he doesn't want to do a Mark Martin and do a part-time schedule until he fully steps out of a car? Maybe he wants to spend time with his family. I'll be honest, I haven't got the chance to read a lot of articles on it in depth to see what the moving pieces or parts of the puzzle or what the reasons were behind them. Maybe you guys can share more, but I just know he's stepping in what started with Kansas. And, I don't know, has there been a statement released from Bayne at all? Has he addressed anything on social media?
So nothing official as far as Trevor Bayne and social media is concerned. All inquiries were diverted to the team, but Matt Kenseth was stated as saying that he wants to make an improvement and benefit the team because, let's face it, the 6 car is struggling. It is not in the best
place. The 6 car has struggled since Mark left.
Indeed.
Right? I mean, who else has been in the 6 car that's been good?
Yeah, they needed someone to right the ship, and who better than Matt Kenseth, a guy with a lot of experience, former champion.
Who took over that after...
David Reagan?
It was David Reagan. The dart with no feathers.
Yeah, and I mean, Trevor didn't get his win with the 6 car. He got it with the 21.
Yeah, Wood Brothers. But Reagan did take it to victory lane.
Yeah, luck.
Come on now, win's a win. You said
a win is a win. But
hey, Danica got a win in IRL once too.
On fuel mileage. But in all seriousness, though, I think Matt Kenseth can bring a lot to that team. A lot of experience.
A mentor.
I agree, for sure. Stenhouse shows so many flashes of...
Potential than falls flat, right.
Right, and I think they need someone like Kenseth, a veteran who's been at Gibbs for however long he was there. Take some of that knowledge back to Roush now and... Maybe they can transform them back into the powerhouse that they were in the late 90s.
And with the sharing of telemetry...
Or even 2000s, for that matter.
Yeah, the sharing of telemetry, Trevor Bayne can look at what Matt Kenseth is doing inside the car, and I think that goes a long way to improve a driver, is to see what other drivers are doing. And right now, Trevor Bayne only has Ricky Stenhouse to fall back on, and that's not a very high bar to look up to. So when you can compare your lap times versus Matt Kenseth, you can really improve yourself.
So I have a question regarding, you talk about telemetry and sharing data. So teams have simulator drivers. Like Bowman was a simulator driver for Hendrick, right? Whenever a driver's racing the race, it's collecting data constantly, correct? Do they plug that into the simulator so they can like race an AI that's running the same pattern that Jimmy
like
ran
a ghost
that week?
Kind
yeah.
Of. Yeah, it's not out of the realm of thought. They could very
sure
easily
do
that.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
I'm just curious. I mean, I don't know if you guys ever heard anything about that. I was kind of curious. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, coming full circle back to NASCAR racing and simulator
if
games.
If they don't, Gasman, you need to get on that patent and
yeah, right.
Published.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a experimental software released in the late 2000s that simulated a driver's GPS location and uploaded it in real time to a video game. So it is possible, and of course they can plug in that telemetry. Ghosts have been around in simulators.
Hell, Mario Kart's got ghosts.
Mario Kart's got ghosts. That was the first time that
in
I 90s. Saw a racing ghost in the early 90s. So that's something that the simulator drivers can definitely do for real-life drivers, and real-life drivers can get in the simulator.
The reason why I was asking that and bringing that up is because why not throw Bane into the simulator to race Kenseth, or, you know, to get that... I mean, he's not in the car racing, he still get that racing experience.
Does Roush have a simulator? Like a full motion rig.
I would
sure
assume all big
does.
Teams do.
If
I would,
they don't.
Or at least
racing.
Access
yeah.
to it.
Yeah, because that's the one I always hear about is the Hendrick simulator. The Hendrick simulator is like the bar. And it stands to reason that they would, but I've never heard about it.
True. I agree. But we don't hear anything about Roush anymore.
Exactly. So,
you know, talking about what it would lead to next year, what do you think? You think Kenseth will take a full-time ride next year and expand to three cars?
So I can almost see them expanding to three cars based on sponsorship if they can get it.
Yeah.
If not, I can almost see them kicking Bane to the curb to bring Kenseth back in and let Kenseth basically ride out retirement with Roush, kind of coming home, right? Ideally, what I want to see, and we kind of talked about this off-air, I would love for them to move Stenhouse to the six car and put Kenseth in 17 and let Kenseth retire in the 17.
Yeah, that'd be fitting. Kind of cool. So let's talk about performance expectations. Where do you see Kenseth running on a week-to-week basis?
Being in that equipment, top 15. Not top 5 or competing for wins, but a...
Let's be honest. Stenhouse won 2 of the 4 restricted play races last year. Kenseth could easily take a...
But is he racing restricted plate races, or is he racing just like mile and a half?
I don't know if they've released... I just know Kansas is his first one, so I know he's not in Dega this weekend, but who's to say he's not in the other Daytona?
He could be in Daytona in July, which you guys will be able to see firsthand,
right.
Or he could be in Talladega, and being a former Daytona 500 champion, Kenseth is hard to bet against.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, restricted plate, yes. Outside of restricted plate, I don't see it being a competitive car.
But I do see the six car making more positive strides.
Oh, absolutely.
Even when Bane gets back in it, I think he can improve 5 spots on the racetrack. Bane won't be competing for any wins. But
sure, and one thing that's going to help Bane out as well, and not just Bane, but his team, is that Ken has that knowledge. So when he's racing, he's going to be able to give feedback to the team that they can utilize to help feed into Bane going forward. Mm-hmm.
It's a question of, does Trevor Bane know what he wants out of a race car? Does he know what he's feeling inside of a race car? He's a nice guy, great for sponsors, but can he get down into the seat and get that feeling that Matt Kenseth can get out of it?
Yeah. Well, that means we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Absolutely.
I mean, I honestly, you know, he came in with Junior, you know, he won Rookie of the Year over Junior, won a championship. I always had a little beef with him over that because Junior didn't get one, but
the
I respect the guy.
Cup. Yeah.
I respect the guy. And, I mean, hell, he did wreck Logano and cause a little excitement, right?
Oh, that was nice.
I mean, just the excitement. When he got older, he's a little bit more apt to stand up for himself, I guess you can say, because he's always the quiet guy, right?
Yeah.
He came out of his shell, it seemed like, and started making things a little exciting.
He did. His final win was heartwarming to see. He showed a lot of emotion that you never see out of Matt Kenseth.
Right.
He is the Iceman.
So let's talk about this. Well, if Kenseth comes back, what's the expectations for Edwards? Or
that's all on Carl.
Even
I think Carl wanted to ride it.
But even, let's say, Mark Martin. Mark Martin's been very vocal this week. Who's to say he can't come back into another car? Or do you see it happening?
I mean, Morgan Shepherd's racing.
Yeah, it's not an age thing with Mark Martin. I think Mark Martin is legitimately, he wanted to go out on a high note, and he saw Hendrick as a peak. When he got his win with in the five, he wanted to go out with that. I don't see Mark Martin returning. He could. Absolutely. He could hop in a car and be competitive tomorrow.
It'd be cool if they did a Darlington throwback next year, the Viagra car, and Mark comes back and drives it. That'd just be awesome. That would be awesome. I mean, he is the clientele for Viagra, right?
I've been, know your audience. Yeah. Know your spokesman, that's for sure.
So, I mean, I think that'd be great for them, you know? Pfizer, take note. Listen to our podcast.
Yeah, so it'll be exciting to see what Matt can do.
Hey, talk about retirement stuff. Yeah, did you guys see the quote that Jimmy Johnson made this week?
I did not.
It wasn't really anything exciting or anything, but he did make the comment that he wants to bring on a sponsor that's going to follow him to the end of his career, kind of hinting that he's only got a few more years left in the tank.
Question is, who's that sponsor going to be?
Home Depot.
That would be ironic. Or Menards. You know, pulling off of the Penske card, I guess it is now. I was going to say Woods Brothers, but Penske car and coming over. That'd be crazy. That won't happen.
Well, it's still technically with Menards, still technically Wood Brothers, but he does have a sponsorship of that car as well. But speaking of which, did you see there's a couple of throwback car paint schemes released this week?
Yeah, I think Blaney's came out just like an hour before our podcast indeed. Was recorded. Yeah, yeah.
And then
he's thrown back to
the burrito.
The burrito.
The burrito. Yeah,
throwing back the classic Jeff Burton.
Jeff Burton X-Side batteries.
Yeah. So that brings back memories for us.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
That was back when, I don't want to age us, but what? High school and us arguing with all these Ford people, because we were Chevy guys, all these Ford people about Jeff Burton.
Which was more classic, though? That paint scheme with the lightning on it, or the previous with the purple?
The purple and the black lines is the X-Side batteries to go to.
To me, it was the lightning, because I had a couple of lightning cars.
Indeed. That's when 164th Racing Champions diecast were at their peak, and that car was everywhere. Yeah. It even graced the cover of NASCAR Racing 4, a little video game throwback for you.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, the classic one, the black and purple, I mean, that's yes, too. But I liked the way the lightning one looked. It looked kind of tough.
And how about Blaney keeping in the family, running his old Jasper Engines dad's paint scheme?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
cool.
That's amazing.
77.
Because everyone remembers Ricky Craven and Kurt Busch, but no one remembers who was running in third. And that was Blaney coming quick. If Busch and Craven didn't have that finish, if they crashed out, Dave Blaney would be a cup winner.
Hmm.
So, What's the, this year's throwback is what years? It's like,
that would be 90. Early 2000s from what I'm seeing. We've got a 2000 and a 2003.
So, I haven't seen everybody's throwbacks yet, but is there going to be?
Yeah, these are the first announced.
Okay, so is there going to be a Ricky Craven lookalike?
Well, they had that
last year.
Oh, they did? Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that now. Okay, so what about the actually, so I think somebody announced they're going to run the Sharpie car.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember it. Of course, it's not Sharpie, but you know.
Right. But same.
Is it Kurt Busch going back to Sharpie?
I think it was.
Yeah. So it's Haas Automation, and instead of a Sharpie marker, it's like a jig for one of their Haas Automation machines. Yeah. But it's the red and black.
That'd be cool if Kurt wins in that.
It would be.
So, Kurt, you guys may not know this, Kurt had his second fastest lap at Richmond.
Really?
We haven't talked about Kurt. He finished in, where did he finish at?
He's got 11th, just outside the top 10.
Yeah, he didn't have a bad night. Actually, all of Stuart Haas did good. I mean, they were all running in the top 10. Harvick had a little troubles, you know, but overall he did fine.
Yep, Stuart Haas is definitely clicking on all cylinders.
So, Sokka, was there another topic you had?
Just a quick fire. Saw on Reddit an interesting bit of, I guess, a fantasy. They asked Lewis Hamilton what his plans are, the Formula One world champion, and they posed the question, NASCAR. As many Formula One drivers have come before, Mario Andretti had the most success winning a Daytona 500, but any thoughts of NASCAR? And he said, we'll see. Or, you know, it's to be determined. It's not out of the cards. It's not in the cards. But do you guys think Lewis Hamilton would be good for NASCAR as a personality? Not that he's going to be successful, but would NASCAR benefit having Lewis Hamilton?
I can see
absolutely
that.
Absolutely. The sport would. That. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's got a pretty big following.
Massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been to the races. He's came with multiple times with Gordon and Jimmy Johnson to the races. So I know he's a fan. And I think this came up, you know, probably 6 months ago. And He said he would absolutely do it if the timing was right and everything worked out. But my gosh, if you're running as well as he is and winning as many championships as he is, I can't imagine you would want to step away from that and you know, try something.
Yeah, but NASCAR is the pinnacle motorsports
of America.
Well, yeah, but even as a whole, it's looked upon being the premier league.
There are some that would argue.
F1 fans are going to argue to that.
Of course, but I mean, that's they're going to.
But they are great drivers,
for
sure.
But another point, too, is, you know, F1 doesn't start until, what, March in Australia, I believe. So, you know, he needs to get in a cup car and get some testing and all of that before he could ever start.
Yeah, it's a completely different environment. He definitely would have to.
So, I mean, I think there would be opportunity, you know, because their season ends, I think, week or two before NASCAR.
Yeah, it's early November, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, the potential's there, and I think it would absolutely be great for the sport.
Good personality. Did the Mobile One car swap with Tony Stewart at Watkins Glen when they ran the boot, and they were within a second of each other. And on a road course, a second is fairly close. It's not like tenths of a second when you're setting an oval time, but still very respectable for a guy who's never sat in a big V8 like that.
Right.
So one last note, this is just kind of an interesting tidbit that I've seen this week that I want to bring up. So did you know that NASCAR is now sniping drones at the race?
I did read that, yeah.
So they're using these electrical voltage shooting guns, essentially, to disable drones flying over the races.
An EMP, essentially, electromagnetic pulse.
Yes, so most drones are programmed to safely land in a case of a fault. So they hit it with this charge, and then it basically goes in fault mode and lands itself.
And even what's funny is some of the drones return to their launch origin point, so if they shut it down, it goes into safe mode, it takes you right to the culprit. You know exactly who's flying the thing.
Yeah, the thing is called Drone Shield. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah,
I would love to be...
something you don't ever know or think existed until you see an article on something like
that. Exactly. I would love to sit on top of like a, you know, spotter stand and just taking drones out.
That'd but I'm surprised it hasn't come up before. I mean, we've seen what fans climb the fence, right?
At Richmond. So,
yeah,
exactly. So I think it's just a matter of time before someone was going to try to do something with the drones. So.
And it's a necessary evil. You cannot have a 10, 20 pound plastic object fall over a racetrack.
Right. Yeah,
cannot,
absolutely. Yeah,
but imagine the camera angles you can get. It would make Fox look petty with the camera angles if you could get a drone
Fox
right there.
Fox occasionally makes himself look petty with some of the dumb stuff
Daryl
they
Waltrip
do.
Does that.
Yeah. Boogity, boys! Sorry, I had to throw that in there. All right, so let's go on. We talked about our news this week. Before we move on, I guess I should be courteous. Mr. Saka, do you have any other news you want to bring up?
Dale Jr. will complete a book scheduled for release in October, chronicling his time post-concussion and his trip back to the racetrack and his rehabilitation and Amy. And that when Jr. has a script to write, he is actually a very deep thinker. You couldn't tell it by a spontaneous interview. Jr. sometimes stammers and looks sort of out there, but I'm excited to get a hold of this book and read.
So it's exclusively after his rebound.
Indeed, it focuses
on
nothing prior. Okay. It's post-concussion on.
Interesting.
And so that's October 16th. I believe Amazon is going to have it. You can pick that up.
Yes, man. You going
to
read that?
I'll make sure to read that. Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. Okay, I don't read. No, I'll buy it.
Can't read or don't read.
He will download the audiobook.
I will download the audiobook.
If Dale Jr. does narrate that audiobook in his own words, though, that's a day one purchase for me. Yeah, like I don't know if he's planning on doing that, but that's
I'm all for the audiobook. I like listening to audiobooks. I like people reading to me and not me putting the effort in to read.
Let you know what you like.
To answer your question, jackass, I can read. Yes.
Okay, just check.
Didn't want to sweep that under the rug.
So any other headlines we want to wrap up with?
No, I'm good.
I think we can move to Talladega.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite races. First race I ever went to.
Yeah. Who won it?
First one was Ernie Irvin.
Oh, the Swervin' Irvin.
Yeah,
in the
93.
Was that the number 4 Kodak Lumina?
Yes.
Yes. Classic.
It's also one where Rusty Wallace wrecked and broke his hand or whatever. It's a pretty massive wreck. Flips.
Yeah. Where he flipped
times.
Yeah.
Flip.
Yeah, I was in the grandstands. And then a couple years later, I went back and I was in the infield. And that was just, that was amazing. Earnhardt won. It was amazing.
I tell you, you hear stories of Talladega. I've never been myself, but it is the party destination on the circuit.
So here I am, a young feller, you know. I go into the bathroom, use the bathroom. There's a dude there, double fisting beers as he's using the urinal. I was impressed, and I was only like 10 at the time. I was like, what is going on here? It was party centric. You are not kidding.
It sounds like you grow up very quickly at Talladega. You learn the birds and the bees in the camper lot.
Yeah, there's definitely things plopping around and flopping around. It was a party.
I've got a buddy that went down there, and he had a pretty good time. I'm just going to leave the details to your imagination, but
fans, what's your best Talladega story? Let us know.
He met a lady friend in the infield and had a pretty good weekend.
wreckingandracing@gmail.com. Send us your Talladega stories.
And it's funny because the drivers are vocal about it too. They'll talk about how crazy it is.
Yeah.
So. And
thank you, Socket.
I don't know if there's any track that really even comes close to that kind of party atmosphere.
I don't believe so. And Talladega is unique from a driver's perspective because when you're running in a pack, there's really not much to do. I mean, you're door to door and inch to inch. Well, topic. But you're right next to the other drivers and. Drivers say, yeah, I looked up in the stands and I saw a girl just pulling her top up and I thought that was interesting. And that's stuff drivers know it going at 190 miles an hour plus.
Yeah.
I think the only other place would be the snake pit for the Indy 500 might be, you know, close to.
Yeah, you get the mosh pit environment going.
Lots of alcohol.
Party.
Party.
Yeah. So let's talk about picks for Talladega. Who we think?
Well, did we talk about our picks last week and how they fared at Richmond?
Let's go over that real quick.
I think
so,
you talked about yours, but
yeah, so mine was Boyer and Byron, which finished. Boyer finished in 9th and Byron finished in 12th, but both were running very good races.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I looked like a genius last week. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, it's very rare, so I'll give you the credit, I guess. But mine, I had Kyle Larson as the pick coming off of his strong run at Bristol. And had he not missed pit road two times in the race, he would have finished better than 7th, I'm confident, and not had his teammate basically crash him under caution. But he came home 7th, so not bad, top 10. And Paul Menard was my dark horse, and he failed me miserably. He came home 24th.
So, Socket, did you happen to make any picks this week?
So, for Talladega...
No, I meant for Richmond. Did you have any, like, at home, just your fan listening to us?
I was listening to you guys, and I actually agreed with the gas man on the pick for Boyer. When you think short track racing, you think Clint Boyer. And Kyle Busch, I felt he would do 3 in a row, so I did pretty well, but you'll just have
but
to take
actually,
my word for
you
it.
You know, came closer on that one, you know. Just to point out, Larson's 7th, Boyer was 9th.
So.
But let's talk about averages. Where's Paul Menard at?
Gets the points there.
Where's Paul Menard at? Anyway, enough. Let's go forward. What's our picks for Talladega?
All right, I'm going first. So my pick, and I'm going to take it before you jackasses steal it, Kozlowski. He's the king. He's the king.
You know, I actually was close to putting him down, and I changed my mind at the last minute.
Kozlowski, my dark horse. Who do you think I'm going to pick?
Stenhouse.
Nope. Although, he's a good first pick.
I don't think you can ever consider him a first pick.
For restrictor plates, I mean, why not?
I was going to use him
anybody could be a first pick for Talladega. Who do you think?
I was going to go with Kozlowski,
who do you think my dark horse
is? Oh, for the dark horse, I will go with... Could we consider Kurt Busch a dark horse? He's got one Daytona 500. He's not known as the plate racer.
Well, my dark horse is Bowman.
That's interesting that you chose Bowman.
Did you just whisper something into the mic there, guys?
I did not whisper it in the mic.
I heard it.
I moved my lips toward you.
I heard it.
And it started with an F and it was
in
you.
An angry fashion.
Yeah. So, Sokka, we'll go to you. Who's your picks?
Well, since Kozlowski was taken, I'll be a better man and choose another driver.
So you were
going to
take
Kozlowski? I was going to take Kozlowski. You'd be crazy not to take Kozlowski. But I will go with Chase Elliott. He was looking really strong at the last Talladega race when he sort of went up on the wall. So Chase will be my pick for this weekend. And a dark horse. I haven't really thought about a dark horse, but I could see someone like...
Paul Menard.
No, not Paul Menard. Not Paul Menard. I could... it's tough because there's really no dark horses at Talladega. Everyone has an equal chance to win.
Well, you just said Kurt Busch.
But so. I'll go with Kurt Busch as a quote dark horse, Daytona 500 champion, but
yeah,
not a plate racer by heart.
All right. Getting to my pick, my main pick would be Kevin Harvick. I think he's...
Really?
Yeah, he may not be as good on plate races as he is on short tracks. Or now one and a half. Yeah. But I definitely think he's usually in the top five. So I think he'll be their winner this week. Now, my dark horse was Bowman. But since you chose Bowman, I decided to go a different direction. And my dark horse this week is going to be Eric Almirola.
Okay.
Pretty solid.
Stuart Haas has been solid. Eric's been impressive.
He almost took the 500.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly. He was towards the front at Daytona. So I think that's a solid choice as a dark horse.
Indeed. Any prospective storylines you think is going to come out of Talladega this week? What do you think we're going to be talking about on Monday?
The big one's going to be small.
Think so?
Yeah. And the reason I say that is because this year's, it's not really been a lot of cautions. It's been kind of a lot of green flag laps this year, other than your cautions for stages or for rain.
I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to go in with the mindset that anybody can win the race. You know, this is what, race 9 or 10 of the season?
This is race 10. We are now one quarter through
exactly.
the season.
Exactly. So, time's dwindling. I mean, you've already got Harvick and Busch. It's taken six wins already. Six of nine races so far. That's incredible to think about, honestly. So, you know, time's running out to punch a ticket with a race win to get into the chase. So, I think everybody's going to be full force, pedal to the metal, go
balls to the wall.
Will we see, with the no ride height rule, the air pack on the fenders like we saw in Daytona? Are we going to see cars get turned around just by turbulent air?
No, I don't think so. Maybe, because
Daytona's a little bit more squirrely than Talladega.
It is.
It is, and that was kind of where I was going to go with that, is if you guys noticed, they kind of backed off of that a little bit for the actual Daytona 500 races. Like, you saw in the qualifying races a lot, but when it came to the race, they knew handling was going to be more of an important task, so they weren't quite as aggressive. Now, I also saw something where they, for this weekend, took out the fact that you could adjust the track bar. Because what they were doing with the minimum ride height is they were, once they passed inspection, were going in and completely maxing out their track bar, get the car to skew, and get one side of the spoiler out of the air so it was faster. And so they've
taken... Man, you're smart.
Yeah, well, again, they circumvented the rules, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's going to play a unique challenge to it this weekend as well. So I don't know if that will impact the ride height or how, you know, if they'll still just slam them. Because, I mean, at Talladega, it's not as, you know, dependent on handling as it is at Daytona, to your point.
And it is a newer racing surface than Daytona, much smoother, more grip.
Good
wider.
Point. Yeah, all good points.
I'm definitely excited, though. I love Talladega. It's definitely the one race two races I definitely look forward to every year. By far, like, the top of my list.
Hopefully we have some good weather down there. I was looking, looks like Saturday for the Xfinity, mid-70s and sunny. And Sunday, low-70s and sunny for the Cup race.
Perfect. Yeah, I went to Talladega once and I just melted. Like, in April, it was horrible. Melted.
I did see a buddy of mine had 4 tickets for sale for Talladega on Facebook the other day. You want to go down there, Gas Man?
I would love to. Unfortunately.
you got landscaping, I know.
I'm not the only one that's got landscaping this week. But can we make it back by Monday? We could.
What is it, 8 hours
from
the great state of Indiana?
Yeah.
Then you factor in that blackout time from those Talladega parties, and you might not.
Yeah, and traffic. Sometimes traffic is just insane coming out of there. So it'd be pushing to get back. If it wasn't for Monday, then I'm like, yeah, let's go do it. But again, have it on Saturday. Hey, you know what? Saturday night race at Talladega?
That'd be an expensive electric bill.
That'd be cool as hell, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, with LEDs now and how bright they are, I think they'll be okay. I don't think it'll be, I mean, compared to Daytona and stuff, I don't know if Daytona is retrofitted to LEDs yet, but.
I think
they did. I think they did. Here recently. Oh, yeah. They'd be crazy not to.
Especially with the Daytona Rising and all that.
Indeed.
And all the new stuff they did. But
yeah.
So does Talladega need a facelift? Or is it fine just where it is?
It's fine.
Oh, I would love to see a Saturday night race at Talladega.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be all right. But as far as a facelift, like what Phoenix and Richmond are doing?
It's not Phoenix anymore. ISM. Get it right.
What's that stand for?
I have no idea.
Exactly my point.
It's an ism.
It will always be Phoenix to me.
Yes.
Just like Infineon is Sears Point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's not Sonoma. It's not Infineon. It's Sears Point.
Yep. All right, fans. Well, thank you for listening to another week of Wrecking and Racing. Thank you to our wonderful fan and guest, Sokka.
Thank you guys for having me.
Don't forget to check him out on YouTube. What's your YouTube thing again?
YouTube.com/SokkaKinoRisaGames. Just search for Sokka, you'll find me, or search Talladega 2018, NASCAR Racing 2003. You'll see mine and Lug's race at Talladega. Pretty exciting.
Awesome. Well, good time, guys. Any last notes from you, Lux?
No, that's it. Just would like to hear from everybody. Give us a shout on Facebook, Twitter. Shoot us an email, anything and everything.
Sounds awesome. WreckingandRacing@gmail.com. We love you guys. See you
next
week.
Have a good week.
The checkered flag waves on this episode. Tune in next week to keep updated on all things NASCAR. Please like us on iTunes and follow us on Podbean. We'd like to hear from you, so reach out to us too at wreckingandracing@gmail.com. Thanks again, and see you soon.